Hi, everyone. Welcome to episode 13 of Marketing Elements Podcast. And on today's podcast, we have Chris Kovac from Nicholson Kovac going to do a three-part episode with us about integrating social media into your marketing communication strategy. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello, Tim and everyone. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I met Chris when he was in town for the Integrated Marketing Summit in March, or was it April?
I think it was late March.
Yeah, I knew it was right around there. So we got talking, and we came up with this three-part, which you may have seen on Twitter, both of us posting the last week and a half, 2 weeks. So we're very excited about doing this. And so tell the people a little bit about you that may not know anything about you.
Sure. And this is for context per my background and kind of, you know, some common themes that I'll have throughout the podcast. And I actually got started in the web in 1996. A college buddy and I started a web design company. And I wasn't really the developer or the coder. I was kind of always on the marketing side and in the business and the copywriting side. And did e-marketing, search marketing, SEO, SEM, email, analytics, online research, all that good stuff through the 90s, and actually work with a startup in the year 2000, which is actually a social media site, which I just thought about a couple months ago. Pretty interesting. It was a photo sharing site. So, and September 11th happened, and my clients were in New York and around the country, and so I was invited to join the agency Nicholson Kovac, and I helped them help build their interactive group here, and then went away and did another startup and sold that. And now I'm back helping the agency kind of get up to speed on social media and how it gets integrated into marketing communications.
Very cool. So we'll get right in on the podcast. So there's a lot of like social influence theory you've talked about before. Could you tell us a little bit about how that plays in with social?
Sure. You know, for us, for me personally, social media is simply another marketing channel. And I think with all the hype that we've heard over the last year or two, that people may think of it as kind of the means to an end. And for me, it's just another channel to really influence people. So I had kind of been playing around with the idea of, well, this isn't really, you know, social media. It's about influencing people, maybe through Twitter, meeting people on Twitter and then talking with them offline, or the opposite. And actually, I'll give credit where credit's due, and I read a white paper by a company called Razorfish, which is a very progressive yep. agency, and they came out with the Fluent white paper probably about nine months ago or so, and they really got into social influence marketing, the math behind it, how powerful influences and second order influence. And so we kind of had our thinking was very aligned. So when we formalized the social media group here at the agency, we went with social influence marketing, which social media is a subset. So to me, social influence is really about one-to-one communication. It's true relationship marketing. And I think something that Gary Vee talked about at Big Omaha last week was kind of one-to-one scalability. And how can you build one-to-one relationships and scale that up to a corporation? So basically, influence is kind of the math and the science and the communications behind influencing people, and then using whatever relevant channels, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or YouTube, to pass along that message.
Yeah, I think that's the most important thing about social, is making it personable no matter what you are. And I think the best brands seem to do that, like Coca-Cola is a prime example. Their Facebook
group, Southwest Airlines.
Southwest, they make it about the people. They're interactive. They answer questions. They do things. Coke promotes user-generated content that is the best. They'll promote that.
So, and you know what I like is, I like Hewlett-Packard, HP's model with their customer service through Twitter, and they actually have the faces behind their customer service. So, you know, to me, I don't want to talk to a brand. You know, I don't want to talk to a corporation. I want to talk to people that can help me. And hopefully I'm helping our clients kind of understand, well, how can we be there for our customers and other prospects and influencers? How can we be there in a meaningful one-to-one way instead of just kind of broadcasting or shouting messages at them repeatedly?
Definitely, yeah, because I know there's a constant debate. Should we use our company logo? Should we use a face? What should we do when it comes to Twitter? So I think people are still divided, but I think if you can use a face picture, go for that always.
Absolutely.
It just adds a little extra personality. You're not talking to some nameless brand, so...
Right, and even the idea that there's multiple people on a corporate account that they kind of identify themselves with their initials. So if you're having a conversation with one person at HP or Southwest Airlines, and now you're having a conversation with somebody else, you know that it's actually a different person. So, again, big believer in the face behind the brand, or the faces behind the brands.
Yeah, I forget which brand it was right off the top of my head, but they created a custom Twitter background with everyone's picture on it. So it listed the initials and who they were and what they did. So it was just...
How cool is that?
Yeah, I forget who it was. They had their logo as the main one, but you went to the exact Twitter page, all the different people who do it and their initials and who they are. So that was really cool.
Was it maybe Zappos?
It could have been. It's been a couple months ago, and I don't remember who did it. But it was...
We'll have to ask around. I think that kind of thing's a great example.
So definitely. So yeah, that brings us into the next thing, because everyone sees social as personable business consumer, but it's actually business to business as well.
I mean, absolutely.
Because so many people like, I know in business to business marketing, you're going, oh, that's just, you can't use it. It's just for consumer. People really don't want to engage in social outside of work. And it's like, no, it's people actually do.
And it's actually the opposite, Tim. And you know, what was an epiphany for me when Jeremiah Alweng, who's now with, I believe, Altimeter, Jay Alweng on Twitter, what a great thought leader. And so when he was working with Forrester, they did research back in, I think, March of 2009 that said B2B social media usage was actually skewed higher than consumer usage in the social media channel. And the main reason was because it was peer influence. And if I'm a aviation mechanic, or if I'm working on a piece of tractor equipment or something like that, I'm going to ask my friends who I know, know that are experts about this, and not necessarily the company. So, you know, we've heard a lot of hype on B2C, like Oscar Mayer and Kraft, and of course Zappos and some of the bigger companies. And now I think we can take some of those key learnings and really kind of key missteps and apply those to the B2B world.
Exactly. I think more and more companies, I just saw this the other week. Someone did it. There's an engineering company. I'm just the king of not remembering who did this. It was like Siemens, where he's an engineer and he does video podcasts about what they're doing. And everyone's like, if you're not in this industry, it's boring. You're looking at this like, why are people watching this? But they get amazing views because they're speaking in the language that their audience is doing. And I think that's one thing businesses have got to realize is it doesn't have to be flashy. It doesn't have to be the new hip thing. As long as you're speaking in the language of your target, then you're going to be successful. Because people in that industry may not want flashy. They want to know the facts. They want to know everything there is.
Absolutely. And the perception could be, if you're spending all that, if you're spending time and resources and money on, kind of shiny things that look good, which may not really be relevant or maybe not address any needs, that I think you'll actually undermine your credibility, because people are like, well, no, I'm talking in this language and you're trying to give me some kind of shiny thing over here. So I think you hit the nail on the head with using common language and really going to where the conversations are taking place. So if I was a company, I wouldn't necessarily want to create my own community if 80 or 90% of the conversations are happening in discussion forums or blogs. I'd want to engage those people, again, where they live.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was looking for. Authenticity of the videos was just, you knew he was an engineer, you knew he knew what he was talking about, and that's what they like. So it's very...
And you know what? One of my favorite examples is the Will It Blend, which I think a lot of people will probably recognize, and that's a blender company, and how sexy is that, right? Trying to sell blenders. And what they did, if you're not familiar with that, they put all kinds of things in the blender and ask, will it blend? And what a great case study. I think now that they're approaching 100 million views, but I saw somebody speak at a conference and they said their average production costs are $400.
Yeah.
So I think that's very powerful.
Yeah, because I was telling people about video. I was like, depending on the industry you're in, your video does not have to be 100% polished. It can be a little rough. It can be a little grainy. It can be, the sound may not be so great, but as long as you're getting your message across. I mean, absolutely. Certain industries, or if your brand's a certain level, you need the polish, you need the perfection, but just to get in and play with it, just have some fun with it, because that's a perfect example of how it's done.
And we were talking earlier that I think there's a natural progression of maturity. So, you know, maybe starting out at a trade show and, you know, maybe there'll be some background noise or a little bit of movement. But I think as you become more savvy about these new tools that you'll continue to get better and better. And, you know, I think you'll see a clear difference even within 3 or 6 months from where you started. So even though it may be a little bit bumpy or you may be a little bit nervous at first, I think that'll wear off pretty quickly. And I think you'll be able to reap your investment or reap the rewards of your investment.
Definitely. Yeah, that's what I tell everyone. It's like, social media is go play in it and have fun with it. It's like,
exactly.
Unless you do a major mess up, no one's going to remember.
Well, and that leads me to something else, which we'll probably talk through throughout the podcast, and that's kind of a test and refine strategy.
Yeah.
And by that I mean, you know, if we're going to experiment with some video, let's not do 15 videos all at once.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's try one or two videos, maybe one's at the trade show, maybe it's some testimonials or some products, and maybe another one is maybe kind of a more of an in-house vehicle about some new things that are up and coming in your organization, and then see how does that resonate. Do you get the views? Do you get the tweets and the Facebook posts? And do people see that as being relevant? And then solicit feedback to say, is this the kind of content that you're looking for? And if so, boy, that's great. And if not, how can we deliver information, again, kind of in your own voice so that we can be a resource to you instead of just trying to shout messages, right?
Definitely. Yeah.
And then, Tim, you know, what struck me about the difference in B2B and B2C social media, and I'll talk a little bit about B2B, is that it's been a very kind of slow evolution. And by that I mean in 2008, as a lot of people were experimenting with Twitter and Facebook, they would talk about very macro issues. So they would talk about maybe aviation or aerospace or, you know, maybe a hospital infection or something along those lines. Or maybe that they read a news article about those types of topics and just that said, hey, did you see this, to their group? And that was kind of interesting. Again, I think they were kind of dipping their toe in the water. And then in 2009, as we were working with different industry clients and doing some monitoring, they started to drill down into the issues just a little bit more. So if they were talking about maybe hospital-acquired infections, they would be talking about the causes of those infections, whether it be proper hand hygiene or sterilization of equipment or doctors and doctors to patient ratios, doctors to nurses ratios, but they weren't necessarily talking about individual brands yet. And I think now, within the last 3 to 6 months, we have seen really kind of a hockey stick effect, and that is people are now starting to equate brands and companies with specific issues. So I think if you're in the B2B space, that there's a lot of opportunity to kind of pay attention to the conversations that have been going on, figure out again where those conversations are taking place, and now figure out how your brand can leverage those conversations, how you can begin engaging people so that your company or your brand name will be brought up more in the mention of these different issues. So to me, that's very compelling. And I think, you know, right place, right time. I think now's the time.
Definitely. Yeah. I think companies need to get out there and start engaging more. And I guess that'll lead us into our next one, is how businesses are using social media. What exactly are they using it for, and how you see it working, like with awareness and reputation,
sure,
management and such.
Absolutely. So, you know, a lot of our clients wonder, okay, well, what are the business cases for doing social media? How can this help me with core business issues and of course, marketing strategies as well? So, and that was a pretty compelling question to us. So we thought about it and we said, okay, let's take awareness, for example. How can social media increase awareness of your product, your company, whether you're a small or large company? And that could be, I think there's a great example of Dunkin' Donuts here in Kansas City, that Kansas City never really had a Dunkin' Donuts, and they opened up a couple shops here. And even before they were getting going, they already had their Twitter account set up. They were engaging people from the local social media community here and also people who kind of live close to the stores. And I saw these people tweeting about Dunkin' Donuts, again, well before I saw any advertising or, you know, a TV ad or a radio ad or anything like that. So to me, now I know that Dunkin' Donuts is coming into the market, and now that they've opened, they have different meetups there. And talk about, I think, a good company that really gets engagement. I think Dunkin' Donuts has done a really, really good job. So again, if you're breaking into a new market or maybe you have a new product, how can you kind of get the word out to a few influencers who then get the word out to their influencers, and that's how you get the viral component to spread. So, you know, I think social media can be a great awareness driver locally, regionally, nationally, or even internationally.
Definitely. Yeah, it's made it easier to get your message out, that's for sure. You just have to
go ahead.
You just have to find those key influencers out there who can get you to the people you want to reach them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And if I could go off on a tangent here, so the reason I was kind of a social media naysayer, and I've been I had an interactive marketing background. I've had, you know, my own websites and forum sites, which are kind of social media. And I thought to myself, well, who wants to know if I'm drinking coffee on Twitter? You know, who wants to know if I'm eating a hamburger down the street, right? But there was a local company here, and I tweeted about needing a dining room table. And they were listening, and a gentleman who happened to be a kind of one of their VPs of sales said, hey, congratulations, I actually won some money playing poker. So he made it relevant to me, and he said, congratulations, we're actually a company called Court Furniture. They're a local company as far as I know. I don't think they're their region. And I was kind of familiar with them, but he said, hey, I'm sure you're busy, but if you'd like a tour before or after hours or, you know, over the weekend, let me know and I'll give you a personal tour. And, you know, there's a couple other larger furniture companies here in town which are kind of top of mind, but just that simple act and something that, that took $0 and took about a 1 or 2 minute investment of time, now they are always top of mind. And here I'm telling that story 2 years later. So, you know, I think that's another way that if somebody's asking for something, then if you do it the right way, transparently, and make it relevant, that you can actually introduce yourself to customers and get on, you know, get top of mind that way as well.
Definitely. Yeah, it's a smart way to use Twitter, I will say. So that leads us in, you can get sales and lead generation as well.
Well, yeah, that's absolutely right. So, you know, a lot of companies, awareness is great, but, you know, we need revenue, especially in this economy. So, you know, how can we use, we keep talking about Twitter, but things like Twitter and Facebook and, you know, social communities and even, you know, YouTube and things like that. But really to get your message out there in different mediums. And whether that's, I think Dell's done a great job of monetizing sales from their Twitter campaigns. My understanding is, you know, when they need to get rid of inventory or if they have a big special, they'll put it out on Twitter, and they've actually monetized it very well. So I think that's one example. But I think, again, if you're at a trade show or if somebody's asking, that you can use these vehicles to engage people with the mindset of driving them to be a lead or maybe driving them into making a hotel reservation or something like that. So it may be, I think a good example of that was Marriott Tweet Your Way to Hawaii. And I may be a little bit biased because I actually won. But even if I didn't, and that, by the way, the Marriott Hawaii, I fell in love with Hawaii. I never got to go. So what a fantastic experience. But my point is they had, they were off season, so they had a whole bunch of extra inventory, so they gave away 25 free trips. And so what that did was a big lead generation program for them. I don't know the exact numbers, but all the people that signed up on the Twitter and Facebook and people who opted into their email communications. And so now that's an opportunity, maybe it's off season next year when the inventories are low, to follow up and engage with these people. And I thought that was a great exercise in kind of using existing inventory to get people excited and to upsell them. And I was actually talking with a hotel and casino today, and I said, you know, so they gave me a wonderful trip, but now when I go back, I'm going to spend money. You know, I want the seaside view. You know, I want to be upsold. And so I think, you know, even if you have to incentivize a little bit, that the value of a repeat customer and the value of a lifetime customer can be very large. So, you know, I think that there is an opportunity for lead and sales generation and even retention and upselling, really.
Yeah.
So like, let's use the hotel example, okay? We'll just say we're in Vegas and we're at a hotel casino, and I have a bad time. You know, the room's messy, the food's terrible, the staff is unfriendly. And let's say it's at a hotel and resort that's a five-star resort, which is kind of like an atypical experience, you know, you would think. And so, you know, I see a lot of value in responding, and if somebody in a transparent way, in a relevant way, but saying, hey, boy, we're so sorry you had such a bad experience, and, you know, is there anything that we can do to make it up? And sometimes there won't be, but I think a lot of times people are open for that, and if it's genuine and you really want to help that person, I think you can actually turn a negative into a positive. So maybe the next time I go out to Vegas and I'm at that same hotel, and this time I'm tweeting like, boy, my experience couldn't be better. You know, they left me a bottle of champagne and a bathrobe on my bed. Boy, you know, what a great experience, and I can't wait to come back again. So, and we talk about influence, and so I think it goes both ways, you know, positive influence and negative influence. And then, again, as I've said, you know, maybe it's an upsell that I really like a particular resort, and maybe they'll give me an upgrade for half off. So they're still monetizing it while still giving me kind of a good deal. So, you know, I that's another way that I think you can, and you can track all this, too, so you can see what's working and what's not.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great idea, because I know that leads into customer service as well, and that's one thing we've seen all along with, like, Comcast has done a really good job, and actually my internet hosting company did once, because I was having issues with the feed going into iTunes, and there was something going on, and I called their tech support, nothing. They just left me annoyed, so I tweeted actually at a friend who was having the same issue back and forth. We were talking about it. And then he finally, the guy who runs their Twitter, there's two of them, comes in and is like, what's wrong? So I got to talk to him and tell him exactly what the issue was. And they finally got it fixed. Because at that point, I was like, I'm done. I'm moving. It's right. A pain to move sites. But I'm at the point now where it's got to be done. And they fixed it. And actually, now I'm higher hosting than I was before. So yeah, it works.
What a great example. And, you know, again, let's use the airline industry, and I won't throw anyone under the bus, but, you know, some airlines are very good when you have some problems and responding, you know, through social media mediums to your issues, and others are not. I was actually in Minneapolis, and I was stuck in the airport, and the airline had a full plane that they didn't tell anyone about, and so probably 100 or some odd people had to spend the night. So, you know, I think that, and I think there's a lot of training, and they just can't kind of push your call center into that. But, you know, how to respond to, you know, kind of people who are upset, and having message maps, you know, not necessarily canned messages, but message maps saying, okay, you know, if this is an issue, here's the proper way to respond. Or what I really like, and what I've seen a couple companies do, is they'll say, okay, well, I can't help you here. I'm going to give you the direct line to this person, and they can help you. You won't have to go through the call center. And boy, you know, I think if banks and insurance companies could do that, I think the world would be a better place, too, because how frustrating is that to be routed around the call center when you have a fairly simple question, right?
I agree.
And I think, finally, just, you know, the notion of integration. And so, you know, how can all this stuff work together? How can you increase awareness while doing good CSR? And again, I think another example is Zappos. And I got to see Tony, who's the CEO of Zappos, speak, and kind of the culture that he built, I think, is phenomenal. So, you know, we're looking at ways to not necessarily emulate, but to take key learnings from what he's done, you know, with his company and other companies, and to apply that to kind of broader business cases.
Definitely, yeah. Because you have to integrate it all in together and make it all work together. And I think
absolutely.
if you're a one-man shop or a big company, you need to divide up who's going to answer what question too. I think that's another issue many companies have. So, well, where does it live? Does it live with PR? Does it live with marketing? Does it live with marketing communications? Does it live with
corporate
customer service? Where does it live? And that's what I tell people. It kind of lives with all of them.
It really does. And I think that's something else, that how do you kind of break down those silos if they're there, and then how, through some training, how can you use your resources most effectively? And in most cases, in some of the bigger brands that we work with and through talking with other peers, that it's not as scary and it doesn't take the resource investment that you think it would. So, and I would, again, kind of incrementally go into that.
Yeah, definitely. It's just one of those things that always comes up with larger corporations, because somebody wants to own it over another division of the company, and it's like you all have to play together and play nice.
Right.
But because there's
that never happens.
No. There's always one that's like, it's mine. It's like,
right.
No. Certain times PR needs to answer. Certain times it's communication. Certain times it's marketing. It's like you really need to see who needs to answer that before you go out and do it. Or direct, like you said, or direct them to that person. So,
right.
So that leads us into strategy. So how can people start, we're talking about it and we're going to talk about it a lot more, but how can people sort of get the strategy thinking? Where can people start?
Sure. Well, I don't think it's any different than your traditional business strategy or marketing communication strategy. And our model of social influence, if you will, is a five-part model, and hopefully it's fairly straightforward. And that is kind of, you know, listen to the marketplace, kind of understand where people are talking. Are they talking in Twitter? Or maybe not. Maybe they're all talking in Facebook or on communities. So listening to the types of communications going on, who is leading those conversations, who's the influencer. So kind of the due diligence in the social media channel before we even get into the strategy. Then figuring out, okay, what are our existing marketing strategies? Are we trying to do a new product launch? Are we trying to increase awareness for maybe a product that no one knows about? And so what are we doing offline? Maybe we're building a microsite. Maybe we're doing a trade show. Maybe we're doing a direct mail campaign, and start to see where social media could help play a role. For example, if it's a trade show, maybe that there can be a meetup or a tweet up. If it's a direct mail piece, maybe we put, hey, did you know that we're on Twitter, that we're going to be at the trade show? We look forward to meeting you. And then figuring out, once the strategies are in alignment, because I think that they have to be. I don't think you can have a social media strategy and then a marketing strategy. I think that's oil and water. So making sure that they're holistic and integrated, and then figuring out engagement wise. So that's kind of the third point in our model, engagement. So the tactics. So where are we? Do we need to develop a Twitter program or a Facebook page? A lot of clients will ask, well, we need a Twitter. You know, we need all these followers. And, well, maybe or maybe not. You know, how does that meet our strategies and objectives? And then finally, you know, we've talked a lot about integration. So how can we integrate this throughout the organization, both internally and externally? And then finally, the ROI. So that's kind of our base model. And I think, you know, when I talk to folks, a lot of times they don't really have a corporate social media policy or kind of a corporate government, governance in place. So to me, before you get on Twitter, Facebook, or any of that kind of stuff, define what the ground rules are. You know, who is going to be speaking on behalf of the organization? What happens if there's a crisis? How do your employees tweet or post on Facebook about the company? You know, what are the best practices in doing so? What are the pitfalls? And, you know, I think that once we establish the ground rules, you know, then we can start to figure out, okay, what objectives are we trying to reach with social media? You know, whatever those
exactly
are.
Yeah, because I have a couple people who are like, we need to be on Twitter. I'm like, well, why do you need to be on Twitter? Because
right.
It's the new bright, shiny object. And it's like, that's not a reason to be on Twitter. And
right.
I was talking today to someone at the lunch. It's like, if you have a Facebook page, make sure there's something there when you launch it. Load it up with pictures, videos, put stuff there. Because if there's nothing there other than join Facebook, create a page, people are going to look at it and go, eh. I was like, you got to have a purpose. You got to go in with it. Because like you said, Twitter may not be where your people are at. So you may be wasting your time on Twitter.
Absolutely.
So you need to find out where they are, where they engage, and then start engaging them. Because like we said before the podcast started, it's going to take you a little while to grow. Unless you're a super huge brand that everyone knows is going to take you a little while to get in, start getting followers and getting fans wherever you may be and growing and then interacting with people, because so many people want the, I want it now. I got to have it now, because right. I'm one of those people too. But I realize you have to grow, and the internet takes time to grow. So you can't try it for a week and go, well, it doesn't work, I'm giving it up. It's like you need to try it for a couple months.
You know, absolutely. And so I would encourage people not to get discouraged if you're starting out on Twitter and Facebook and whatever, if you're not getting the types of followers that you're looking for. It took me, I don't know, 6 months to get 300 followers on Twitter. And then once you kind of hit that tipping point, then you'll start to grow and people, you'll start to have genuine relationships and engagements. And so, but I would also encourage, whether you're small businesses or larger corporations or even individuals, don't think of social media as a short-term strategy or a pilot program. So one of the worst things for me is that if a person or a corporation starts a blog or a Twitter or a Facebook and then they disappear. And then at least you're kind of scratching your head saying, well, hey, where did you go? I was interested in what you're saying. And, well, maybe your company's not the right one for me.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I tell a lot of people is if you get started in social media, you need to stay engaged in social media. You need to keep at it. You need to keep going. Like I said, it's going to grow. It's going to, because I have one brand that's smaller that I worked with. It took them a good year before they really got good engagement on their Facebook page. I was like, so it was grew. It